And believe me, that's nothing but a fact. You can't keep this unless you enslave your people. The only way to keep it, you have to enslave the people. What I mean by enslave the people, we have to put quotas on you. To be a member here, you have to give $8 a week. Every member. If we go back to the old policy, we can keep this, and not only keep this, we can get more property. When you're getting $8 from every member, some places it was $6, some places $8, some, and one place it was $12 a week. So if you tax every member to give you that kind of money every week, you can keep these things. But none of you can say I ever forced you or taxed you to give them anything. And as a result, you've been able to live a better life. You've been able to realize more money to take care of your personal needs, your family, and to have a better life for yourself. And this fair policy is approved by God. It's Islamic. The one we had before was not Islamic. It was oppressive. It was not fair. And because it was not fair, corruption set in. And pretty soon, it was very obvious, not only to open-eyed insiders, but also to observers on the outside, that slicksters were getting rich off the poor followers. I'm happy that those days are gone. And I'm prepared to make this situation practical, livable for poor people. And I believe we can do it, but with your strength, with your spiritual strength, your moral support, we can do it. Your personal sacrifice, not of money out of your pocket, but your ability to say, I don't have to be that comfortable. During the last month of our winter, we had to cut off the gas to the school. Did we close school? No. Our teachers came out in their sweaters and in their coats, and the children told the children to come out in sweaters and coats, and they sit in the cold classroom with their sweaters and coats on, teachers and students, until the warm weather came, and they took them off. What did we save by doing that? We saved a cost of anywhere $5,000 to $8,000, $9,000 a month just for gas. That's not electric. That's only gas. I was almost frightened to death when I went down and saw the furnace and the equipment down there that supplies this place with heat. Say, boy, is it true? I don't believe it. I said, those other buildings must be connected to our system. I wanted to go across the street and check out the property across the street to see if they're connected to our system. In my private home, we got a small furnace. I can almost hug it. And down there, you get tired just walking around that furnace. I got a little pipe, you know. It frightens me just to see the pipe that's carrying gas into the fire in my house. That money, gas is money. You paying for it. Gas pipe that big can mark that gas to the fire to burn up. I went down there, they got a pipe that big. That ain't no joke. That is no joke. You know something about pipe, I'm talking about 8-inch pipe. I was so frightened it might be 6. But I guarantee you it ain't 5 or 4. Huge pipe. I say, hey, that ain't no, that ain't gas. I said, no, it can't be. I said, that must be sewage. He said, no, brother, ma'am, that's the gas line. I said, well, you cut those damn pumps off right now, we will do without gas. Then soon as we shut it down and they saw that the meter wasn't running, there wasn't no money coming, then they came down and said, we come to cut off the gas. I said, God bless you. You don't know what you're doing. So they saw what Honorable Elijah Muhammad was after, so they made him pay through the nose. And we have to work ourselves out of the situation. It's going to take us a little time. We're going to have people come in and study that situation downstairs there and see can we put in a more economic unit and system. If that can't be done, we're going to find another way. And until we can find another way that we can live with, in the winter months, we're not going to have school. We've already changed our school calendar. No school in the cold months. My children, they complained, at first when we told them, no school. They said, well, we're going to have to go to school in the summer? Yes. They complained. So we are making the adjustment that we're going to be out of school this summer, but in the coming term and year, we will not be out of school. We will go straight through winter and summer. I mean, go straight through summer into fall. When the cold months come, we shut down. Save all of that gas. Now, you know, we came from Africa, didn't we? And most of us came from the south to the north, didn't we? And when we came to the north, the city planners, they planned that we live on the south side of the northern cities. Is that not true? So give the air condition back to the white man and let us get some fans. No air condition in this place this summer. No. You came from Africa. Don't tell me you can't stand the heat. We're going to make it manageable. Make it manageable. Because we don't want to give up. We don't want to close up shop. We ain't going to never do that. We're going to keep the place for mess debt. We're going to keep a place for our school. In fact, we want to expand the school. We want to put another top, another floor, another level on that school back there. So we can accommodate twice the number of students we have back there. We ain't thinking about shutting up these important things. These are necessities in the life of Muslims. But we are going to make it livable with the help of God and with your help, the help of the sensible members in the community. Digressing a bit, kind of getting away from that, coming now to the question of communicating the dawah, the message, the voice of the community. Making it clear, being heard and being understood. Sometimes I think it's going to take maybe not 10 more years, but maybe 30 more years for our ears to get the noise fallout, the pollution from the old days out of the ears so we can hear what is being said now. I talk to my own community, and I meet brothers and sisters, and they feel just like I do. They say, "Brother Imam, they didn't understand what you're saying." They say, "Brother Imam, I can tell the way they're talking. They ain't hearing you." And I say to them, I don't say to the person, but I say, "Yeah," I say, "that's so." But in my own quiet thoughts, I'd be saying, "That's exactly the way I feel. I thought that too. I thought that I was talking pretty plain, but they just can't hear." Now, anytime you see your own media, your own publication, make a report on what your leader said, and leave out the main point, leave out the main message, the main interest, then that tell you that even the people who are charged with responsibility for carrying these things, they ain't hearing right either. Sometime I read, I say, "Boy, did I say this? Now, I know I talk bad, but did I make this many grammatical errors?" Well, either we need more qualified people, or we need more honest people. Then I pick up a paper by outsiders. Now, this is not just one. This happens practically all the time. If the outsiders care enough about what we said to print it, in most cases, they have given a fair report. It's not how much you put in a paper of what I said or what an imam said. It's how truthful you are in keeping the emphasis. When you take it out of context and ignore where the emphasis was and put something here that you know just this is something he said, can't say we didn't quote him, but it has no appeal. It is not addressing current problems. So the presentation of the voice of the community, the image, the imam, is so neglected, either because of the lack of qualification or dishonesty, that we ourselves now are a factor for misrepresenting us more than outside. Is that the truth? That's the truth. The imam here, who's here, who's convener for the National Council, he said, "That's the truth." The bigger the city is, the more afraid the establishment is of wholesome thoughts and ideas addressing problems. So in Chicago, don't expect for them to tell you what I'm saying or to report what the imam said at some meeting. Don't expect that. Any reporter who takes up that responsibility and do that in a Chicago paper like the Sun-Times or Tribune, he is risking being fired and maybe killed. But in some of the small towns where the moral element in life is still very important, where trust between citizen and citizen is still very important,
we can get a report. And occasionally I visit some of these small towns, and they report on us, and I said to myself, how come our reporter didn't hear that like that? Now, I spoke down in Little Rock. My theme from the beginning of the talk to the end of the talk was community responsibility. That should be the caption. It is the caption here. Muslim leader stresses concern for community. That's the caption here. This paper is the Arkansas Gazette. And I don't know who owned it, but I saw white folks all through it. Now, if the white folks are not afraid to give the readers the emphasis, where the imam's emphasis were, why should we be? And I want to read where he quotes me. He said, Muhammad urged Muslims, a black religious group, referring to us, you know, to work with Christians and other religious groups. And he quotes me here, let us not be people seeking self-promotion, but be Muslim and share responsibility for community life. He quotes me here. If they didn't do nothing but give that, that's the gist of it. That was the gist of my talk. That was my purpose for coming down there, just to let the people see that the best way to progress, the best way to realize creativity, the creativity in us, the best way to bring about a situation of honesty and trust between us, is to come away from these selfish kinds of things that we commit ourselves to and see the community as the bigger concern and work for improving the dignity and worth and credibility of your community. I say to myself, well, they can just get that, that's it. They don't have to take two pages of the paper to tell the people what I said. Just don't destroy the emphasis. I'm not going to go as near as far as I normally go with this. In fact, I'm getting ready to conclude it. Because I want you all to have a good time today, rest of the day, and tomorrow. I'm going to read you this entire writing about that meeting. Entire writing. The heading is, Muslim Leader Stresses Concern for Community. Imam David Dean Muhammad of Chicago, leader of the American Muslim Mission, told about 400 persons at an ecumenical gathering Tuesday that happiness was the goal of life. Then he puts in quote, but it comes with involvement, with responsibility and community life. Then he goes on to say, Muhammad is the leader of the largest unified Muslim community in the Western Hemisphere. He succeeded his father, Elijah Muhammad, as leader of the Muslims. He spoke at a $12.50 plate educational awards benefit banquet. Isn't that important? To say what brought us there? Well, I know we said, but it's lost within two pages of spiritual dawah. And this report that we had was one of the best we ever got. I mean, in our journal. And still I'm not satisfied with it. But it's one of the best we ever got. He goes on to say the awards benefit banquet honoring black educators who have taught at six formerly black senior high schools. And they go on to give us
name the high schools. And it says none of these schools now operate as senior high schools. Muhammad said, in other words, the Muslims of Little Rock came to the aid of non-Muslims who were teachers, educators in the public schools, came to their aid to lend them support at a time when they badly needed it. Their jobs are threatened by new legislature down there. They have legalized the teaching of children at home by parents. The children don't have to come to public school. And at the same time, they have required a test. They have required the teachers to take a test yearly. So while they have made it harder for teachers to qualify to be teachers, they have allowed parents to teach at home without any proof of qualification. So you can understand them being a little uneasy. And we have to congratulate the Muslims of Little Rock, the masjid, the imam down there, Imam Shaheed, his hardworking wife, the teachers down there of the Claire Muhammad School down there, and all the members with their outside supporters that congratulate them for putting on that awards banquet to give moral support to those teachers in this critical moment of theirs. He goes on to say, Muhammad said that, and he quotes me, when people are denied the opportunity to share the burden of society, they aren't responsible for the institutions that support that society. Now think of ourselves. That's talking to us. It's talking to our people. Think of us. If we are not welcome into that elite group or into that special group of citizens that they trust with the responsibility for the shape and future of community life, then how can we be responsible for deterioration in the public schools or for deterioration in any of our institutions when we are not even allowed to have a say-so when decisions are made for those institutions and for the society? I didn't have to say a whole lot for that reporter to see what I was saying and take it and give it to his readers. We have to become courageous, morally courageous, lovers of freedom and democracy, patriotic in the spirit of devotion to God and excellence, to the extent that we will brave the criticism of those who will criticize. We're weak. We're afraid they're going to make us lose our job or bring up our past and put us in jail for something we did that they didn't cares the coat for yet. We are people burdened by fear so much that we can't even answer the call to establish a dignified community that God has given us all the tools and all the equipment for. He goes on to say, he rejected the pleasure ethic. He's talking to his people. We're supposed to have sensitive, intelligent reporters for ourselves who can see what the imam is saying and then put it in the paper for our reader. He said the imam rejected the pleasure ethic.
Well, I started my talk out by saying, yes, I agree with my former professor at Junior College when he said happiness is the goal of life, but with some qualification, with some explanation, with some criticism of that belief. I don't accept it as it is. Right? Okay. And then I went right into condemning this belief that to pursue your pleasures, that to allow people to pursue their pleasures, is the best situation for a society. That particular process will bring about the purging of their bad antisocial urges, etc., if you let them be free. Yes, but only after we have a devil on our hands. Only after a devil is formed in our society and then becomes so big that he oppress us and lock us up in our own houses and make us afraid to come out on the streets. And we're the legitimate citizen, and the criminal is out there as though he have a license from the White House, and we can't go in peace. That's what happens when you follow that kind of policy or that kind of theory. Praise be to God, we got some people who can hear your uneducated imam and get the blessing that God has given him. Then he quotes me, says, to go to work Monday for Friday night, said an imam added, the bigger your concerns, the more healthy and happy you're going to be in your life. To go to work just for Friday night. Isn't that what most of us do? Go to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and many of us will take a double shift. Just so we have a big fun day, Friday. In fact, I